It's Thursday, September 26, 2013, and you're listening to episode 313 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 35 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
This is Chris.
And I'm your special guest, Tom Lommel.
Yes, joining us today is Tom Lommel, not per se as an interview subject or anything, but just as a guest host.
You might remember him from our Kickstarter episode.
Yes, Tom Lommel, a.k.a. Bill Cavalier, the Dungeon Bastard. We're probably going to try to have him on the next episode as Bill Cavalier and see how that goes. And if it's funny, we'll run it. If you don't hear it, it's because it was not funny. So
wow.
That is our dedication to quality. Wow.
What's the over-under on that? What's the over-under? Like 30, 70%, 10, 90? I don't know.
I wouldn't lay money on it.
Well,
no,
I guess.
No.
We will bring our C-plus game to the episode.
That's right.
I always flipped my Admiral Akbar thing, and he landed face down. I don't know what that means. But
he always lands face down.
If it's face down, it's a tarp. If he's if he's on his
tuna.
Back, it's a trap.
That's all I'm going to say.
Thank you, Pat. Okay,
yes, so the topic
he missed out on being on Kicked in the Dice.
I did.
So he's all pissed off.
It.
Yeah, he's all wound up now.
Well, thank you for testing the compressor there, Pat.
You're welcome.
So anyway,
you're welcome. I'll go both extremes.
The topic for today is what happens when you are in a gaming group and the group is gaming a genre or a setting. Let's say a setting that is strong enough that it feels like its own genre, even if technically it kind of fits within another genre, and you don't get the genre. All right, let's start with this from what I think is the easier angle, which is you are the player. Mm-hmm. Now, let me give an example, and then Wayne, you have an example from another game, and I think some of the other guys said they had examples. So let's give examples here to kind of illustrate what we're talking about. I have not read the Dresden File books. I have not watched the TV show. I've not read the Wikipedia synopses. I don't know much of anything about the series beyond the fact that it's urban fantasy about a guy named Harry Dresden who has to kind of keep his magic and whatnot on the down low. Okay, so I know kind of the very high gist of it, but I really don't get the ins and outs of the subgenre of urban fantasy that Jim Butcher is going for in that series. And so some time back, when Wayne threw out, hey, I'm running a Dresden Files game for the rest of the group. Dan, why don't you come and join us? We talked about this story. I heard urban fantasy. I heard you play a mystical creature. At the time, I was reading Journey to the West. And so I decided, okay, I am going to play a spirit, a water dragon, that is responsible for the Mississippi River and is underneath Ao Guang. And if you know your Chinese mythology, that will make some sense to you. And I actually had a guy who's Chinese tell me he was impressed by my pronunciation. So I know that's correct, damn it. But anyway,
you get one thing correct.
Well, I get nothing else correct on this episode. I got that right. But the point being here that the character never quite fit in with what was going on. Mm-hmm. You know, the rest of the group had a flow to it. The world had a flow to it. And this character very much felt like an after effect or an afterthought. The last time we talked about this, we talked about how the character didn't fit into the group, which was one issue. But the character also really didn't quite fit into the setting. I mean, a Chinese water dragon kind of works in Dresden, but really is not within the vein of what that subgenre of fantasy is going for. I would have been far better served playing a vampire or a werewolf, or certain types of wizards, or whatever, than attempting to play what I did. And the problem was, my character from the beginning was an outsider and a non-starter because of the fact that she did not fit into the genre that we were playing, because I, as the player, Dan, I did not understand what the subgenre was and was not about. Now, Wayne, you said you had a similar experience with BattleTech.
Yeah, in that case, it was more of a matter of I didn't understand that world that we were going into. I saw big giant robots. I'm thinking big giant robots fighting each other. But there's so much nuance to that setting that I didn't get. Like the first time it looked like we were going to be defeated in combat for me, my immediate thought was, this is the end. How does the campaign go on? They're going to take our mechs. Because I had no idea that setting-wise, you surrender, you get to keep everything, you walk off the field, that there are rules for things like that in place.
It's chivalric giant robots.
Yeah, and that was really hard for me to grasp. And it made it hard, at least initially, for me to play a character in that setting. Because there's just some things about the setting that are inherent that you should know that I had no idea. That was the biggest one that hit me first thing was, you mean we can surrender and we don't lose all our stuff?
My experience, Dan, was similar to yours. It just also happened to be with Dresden as well. And this was, you know, my regular gaming group, and they had kind of essentially, you know, about a 2-session start on me. And I had listened to one of the books, so I had a sort of grasp about it. But because of the nature of the setting that had been created, I didn't really get what exactly was going on. I mean, I kind of understood what the function of the group was and sort of how my character was going to fit in there. But I had the additional problem of being unfamiliar with the rules and exactly what my character could do. Even after reading it, I still didn't quite understand what my character was really capable of. And then players tried to, my fellow players tried to explain it to me. And I still was having trouble really wrapping my mind around what the capabilities were. What, you know, beyond the fact that I might be able to go and do some role-playing here and there, what could I, you know, mechanically do in this game when it came down to it? And I struggled with that for the entire time that we played until the point came when I had to have a discussion with him about my character saying, look, this is not working for me. I want to get it. I want to try and understand. I want to believe. But I'm just too old and your strange magic and modern urban fantasy confuse and frighten me. No, it was Unfrozen Caveman Gamer. That's what I... But, you know, and they did, as good players should. You know, they tried to help explain things. I even got to change up my character a little bit to make it something a bit more recognizable, something I could, more that was more familiar to me, that kind of helped me ease more into the game and what the genre setting was.
Chris, you know why there's a special place for you in hell? When you said Unfrozen Caveman, you made me think of Encino Man.
I thought of the exact same
really?
Thing.
Yeah. Really?
Encino Man is a terrible
Chad,
movie.
I will meet you out in the garden. We'll flip to see who gets to be the second.
Right. Yeah, Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer.
But
yeah.
Thank you. You know the one he's going for, right?
No idea.
The Phil Hartman skit from Saturday Night Live.
Saturday Night Live is awful and not funny, and therefore I don't subject myself
Absolutely
to it.
Absolutely it is now. Back at that time, I thought it was pretty good, but Phil Hartman is one of my favorite
Phil Hartman
comics.
Was a genius.
God damn you, crazy Phil Hartman's wife. God damn you to hell.
Also, Phil Hartman's crazy drug addiction and philandering maybe have contributed to that situation.
Well, you know what? That's not what put the bullet in his head, though. So
details,
I'm
details.
Go
true.
With the crazy bitch.
So that may have also contributed to his comedy, too. So
yes.
I will say that I have had this experience kind of in limited form. I'm involved with NASCRAG. I don't know if any of you guys played the NASCRAG tournament at Gen Con at all. But it's an interesting kind of spin. It's not your classic fantasy game of D&D. There tends to be like some modern elements and things like that. And originally it was like sort of like you were dwarves who were going through a dungeon and maybe you encountered a tank or there happened to be a small robot that you fought or something like that. And then kind of as the tournament evolved, like it's been going on for over 30 years. So there've been a lot of different writers and stuff like that. And it's always had kind of a zany kind of gonzo aspect to it. So pop culture stuff inevitably sort of leaked its way in there. To like at one point there was an entire round that was sort of like a spoof of the whole Harry Potter series. You know, like you instead of going to Hogwarts, you explored pig pimples.
Yeah.
And it was clever, but you know, you walk that fine line of like you want to cater to the Harry Potter fans. On the other hand, like I read the first three books, and then I was like, oh, I'm not going to wait another 2 years for J.K. Rowling to unleash her genius upon, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sort of like left it by the wayside. And then we started to get into jokes where I'm like, I don't get this and I don't know whether I should care. So it can be difficult when you have something that's very genre specific like that as a player to not feel like, you know, you're the only duckling swimming, you know, in the sea of goop and everybody else is like out kayaking the high ocean seas and surfing this wave of brilliant pop culture or whatever the DM has created there, you know.
From the player's standpoint, I think I have two big points of advice. One is the other players at the table need to recognize very proactively, and I mean very proactively, that there's somebody in their midst who does not get the genre and goes to great pains and great lengths to explain things to them, to show them their options, to maybe tell them, hey, your character's not quite the best idea. Here's how we can rework it to work a little bit better. And that was one of the frustrations, and I'm not pointing fingers here, but that was one of the frustrations that I had in the Dresden game, was there was a lot of socialization going on around the table, and I didn't get a lot of input. And so I made that character very much in a vacuum, mostly working with Wayne, and occasionally Chad would throw in a comment or two. And out of the gate, that character was a disaster. I felt like, and I don't know if this...
I thought it was a good character, just not for that game.
Right, not for that game. And by the time that that character, I think, had really fully kind of come out to the open and people understood just how out of place the character was, it was really hard to back that out. And so I think there has to be a lot of proactivity. For example, Wayne in Battletech, I know at least you had the advantage that other people around the table were yelling out some of the possibilities. When you guys kind of overstepped your bounds a bit, I would try and pause the game. And I'm not trying to strain my arm and pat myself on the back here, but I would pause the game and explain to you what your options were and what things meant. And when you guys were like willing...
You're about to commit a war crime. Do you realize that?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that.
Or if you pull back in this way and send out certain signals...
What do you mean I can't attack the jump ship?
You know, I think that I was thinking about Wayne. You know, you're talking about Wayne and his Battletech game. I ran a game for Wayne a long time ago, and I will pat myself on the back for this because it's the game I wrote, which is Lucid. Pat's shaking his head at me. I was running a Lucid game for Wayne and some other people. It is based on Inception. And so, you know, you go deeper into dreams and that sort of thing. So, and really the only reason I'm telling this story is so Dan puts the link in the show notes and my SEO goes up. But other than that is that Wayne hadn't seen Inception.
I had neither at that time.
And you described the game as a cross between Inception and The Matrix.
Right.
Because
I changed. Yeah. Lucid is not a straight Inception knockoff. Except it's
what's going to happen when Wayne doesn't know Inception but knows Matrix.
Yeah. It's all Matrix.
This universe becomes 100% Matrix too.
Right. And you were playing that and I didn't realize that. So the example too is that there were these subconscious projections. You know, you go into the dream. If the person you're kind of infiltrating has had training, then guards will appear and protect him. And then they don't really know you're there until you make it obvious and that sort of thing.
And the appearance you gave the guards was black suit, sunglasses.
Agents.
Yes. Agents. And I didn't realize I was doing this. And so I was doing this perfect storm for Wayne. Well, long story short, in Inception and in Lucid, it's like a guy's coming at you. Yeah, I dream up a flamethrower and I take out 20 of them. Who cares? It's a dream. They're gone. They're ethereal stuff that isn't real. In The Matrix, that, you know, there may be no spoon, but when the guy punches you in the face, you're getting teeth knocked out.
If you're not Keanu Reeves, you run.
Yes. And so that's how Wayne was playing it, because he was not Keanu Reeves.
Let me give kind of two sub bits of advice to this. One is, over time, if you're going to be serious about the game, it would probably behoove you to get off your ass and do a little bit of reading.
No.
You know, if you're going to play a Dresden campaign, read the source book, get on Wikipedia, read the synopses, listen to some of the audiobooks.
Pretty decent TV series streaming on Netflix.
Yeah, you know, whatever works for you. Go watch Inception, you know, whatever. The second thing that I would say is play on the very conservative side. Let me give an example from prose writing. I was asked to contribute a story to a steampunk anthology, which Riley better put out here at some point, unless I fly to Australia for less than noble purposes. But I realize that steampunk is not one of my pet genres, in the way that science fiction in particular is. And so I decided to go with what I knew. And so what I did was I dug up a bunch of information on the Franco-Prussian War of 1870. I started with historical backdrop. I was able to read up a whole bunch on the things that were going on. I can do broadside combats pretty well. So I took some of the actual naval ships of the day, put lift fans and balloons on them, turned them into airships, and all of a sudden, boom, I've got steampunk. But if you look at
I hate to tell you this, Dan, but That's pretty much it. You nailed it.
But here's the thing.
Right there.
There was no Victorian Doctor of Clockwork Robots.
That's Clockpunk.
There was no... What is that thing called where you measure people's heads?
Phrenology.
Phrenology. Yeah, there's no
phrenology.
But the point being that, you know, nobody was sitting in the salon discussing the...
That's salon punk!
But the point being...
Can you tell
I want to make
really
something that's science shit. Punk. I just want to know what would be classified as science
well,
punk.
Well, what kind of science?
Chemistry
punk. Boom.
Cation punk. But
Breaking Bad punk.
Meth punk.
Yes. Oh,
Breaking Bad punk is also known as bitch punk.
Holy crap. I would totally play bitch punk.
Bitch punk. But the point being, though, that I didn't try to embarrass myself by reaching into all these things I didn't know. I took what little I did know and spun it with things that I was more familiar with. So I took that historical fiction that I was more familiar with and gave it kind of a steampunk spin to it, which once again would have been something I'd been better off doing. In Wayne's case, you know, it was a one-shot game. You can't stop and say, okay, give me 2 or 3 hours so I can go watch Inception yeah. or read the Wikipedia page. What you could have done, for example, is asked a lot of questions. Well, what's Inception about? What's the gist of it? You could have played a character that was a lot more reserve that basically stuck with the things that you did know, the few things you had picked up. Watch other people, follow their lead. I mean, especially in a game like that where your character is not based on class and stats, it's really more based on these questionnaires and then the Jenga tower. You've got a lot of freedom to sit back, watch what other people do, and play into that in a game that does have classes and stats.
What about in that case though, where half of the table had never seen it? I couldn't go off of their cues.
But half the table had.
True.
And so there are people in there. You know, I had seen it. If this is the same game that we're talking about.
Yes.
You know, I had seen it. My character was actually the group's leader. I don't remember what the exact title is for that character, because I know each of them have a role title or whatever. But I was...
You're the point man.
Point man. I was the point man. I was the guy that was in charge of the run. And so if you had played your characters just a little bit more submissive, a little more inquisitive.
And that's the key. If you're playing with Dan, make him the leader, be submissive.
Be a gimp.
Yes. That is bitch punk.
That's wow. right there. I want to see you in a zipper mask. And I'm going to keep you in a box until you're necessary.
There you go. How many years have we been doing Fear the Boot?
That's right.
That's the core.
All you need to do is watch about 5 or 10 minutes of Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
And you've got down how to play right.
How to play bitch punk. Yes.
If you weren't afraid of the boot before, you're very afraid of the boot
now. I was
going
to say, the boot is very apropos now.
That's right. Now you understand where we got the name, don't you?
That's right.
If you're the BDSM boot.
I'm going to kind of flip Dan's advice on its head a little bit and say that I think maybe Dan made the right choice in playing this weird, mystical Chinese dragon character. I think especially if you're in a one-shot and you're the only person who doesn't know the genre and all of the inside bits of culture and setting and stuff like that, why not play the foreigner? You know, why not play the naive character who, like, legitimately, like, in character doesn't get it? And that way, you don't have to stop the game to have all of these asides in terms of, like, well, what does that mean? Or can I do this? Or what are my options here? Like, it gives the other players a reason in character to sort of, like, help guide you along through the thing.
I did that as a new role player a lot. I would play the new character that's new to the environment just because it gives you that chance to do it all in character.
I came in a couple games into it, and the group had a very strong dynamic already going. And unfortunately, without intending to, I became something of a disruption. My outsiderness, instead of giving me a chance to explore the setting, became disruptive to the group dynamic. And I think there's fault there that could be spread all around the table. I think there could have been more.
There's one thing we do at Fear the Boot. We point the finger of blame.
Every which way.
Yes.
Everybody is a complete up.
That's right.
If you're listening to the show, that is you.
Dan, we're scrapping our current RPG project. We're writing a new game. It's going to be Bitch Punk.
But don't you mean you point the toe of blame at everyone in the
right.
table?
That's right.
Well, and then they get ground down with the heel. But, you know, actually, yeah, when you play that outsider like that, if you were to do it in a campaign setting, in a lot of ways, you are essentially, you're kind of like playing Kung Fu, the role-playing game. You know, if you remember the old Western David Carradine series, you know, he is the outsider who everyone does kind of work around, but yet he still works with them, and they, you know, in turn end up learning from each other.
Sure. I think while this is an overly done archetype, an example of this that's fairly popular in fiction is you tell a story in the distant future, distant past, and there's one character in there who's from the modern day. Mm-hmm. Buck Rogers is an obvious example. And that person becomes the character through which you get the world explained to you. It was Keanu Reeves in The Matrix. Yeah. Here's the guy from the outside. Now, he hadn't time traveled per se. By his perception, he had time traveled because he went from, what was it, 1999 into, like, by the end of it, they weren't even sure what the year was, but it was way out into the future. But nonetheless, while he hadn't actually time traveled, he had that perception still of being the outsider. And I think it can be a somewhat ham-fisted or overdone archetype.
But so commonly it works. Arthur Dent in Hitchhikers, Luke Skywalker in Star Wars.
Well, if you think about it, when you tell a story with characters, be it a movie or a book or something, you are telling the story from the perspective of a character. Now, sometimes that perspective shifts, but generally speaking, stories are told from the perspective of a character. It's just that you really can't do that very well in a role-playing game because there's so many characters with real people behind them. But, you know, even then, I try and do that when I run games, because I'll run games in sections and following themes, and I compartmentalize it and stuff. And I'll run a game. It's just like, okay, the focus of this game is on Wayne's character. And it's not that you guys are side nothing characters in it. You are living, vibrant parts of the story, but we're all kind of telling Wayne's bard story here. And then we'll switch over to Pat. And then we'll tell Pat's wizard story. And then we'll tell Dan's gnoll fighter story. And then, you know, we kind of keep going with that.
You play one bard with the group. You never live it down. No.
I've played more than one bard, but I've only played one bard with
that's
you.
That's a problem.
And how many bard games have you run that are completely bard themed?
Oh, my God.
Okay, I've done that twice.
And on the forums, when I suggested somebody as a ridiculous player play an ogre bard whose parents have been killed by Al-Qaeda.
Oh, that's awesome.
What was your response? My next character.
I'd play that game.
So one thing I want to hit on here real quickly.
Is a bard?
Yes.
I just want to say in Kung Fu, he's wandering around city by city, sharing stories.
No. What he's doing is
he is a bard.
He's sharing cryptic nonsense that sounds deep because it doesn't make any sense while there's lens flare going on because the sun is right behind his head.
Bloom.
Every episode.
Yep. He is reflecting off his forehead. With a monk stat.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, he's multiclassed.
He's just looking for a closet and a leather belt.
Kung Fu, the legend ends abruptly.
Yes.
And so, unfortunately.
Yes.
One thing I want to hit on here real quick before we wrap this up is what happens when you're dealing with this from the Game Master's perspective. Let's say you're in a group that has a limited number of people that are willing to Game Master.
Like one.
Maybe you're the only one. Or maybe you're not the only one, but the other person or persons that would Game Master desperately want to play in this game, not run it, which kind of leaves you to run it. But well, this really is your genre. The example that we gave prior to recording was, what if tomorrow the group said, we want to play a Dune game?
Right.
And because you guys are such huge Dune fans, it falls to me to run the game. But apart from reading a portion of the original book, and by a portion, I mean like 50 pages,
right,
and having seen that
David Lynch movie.
The original movie, the David Lynch movie with all the whispering. I don't know really all that much about Dune. And so, once again, I get the genre of dystopian science fiction, but there's a very specific subgenre and feel to Dune that if I don't get right, I will have failed to run Dune. Mm-hmm. And what do you feel you do in a game master's perspective, apart from study really hard and really fast and pray a lot?
Well, Dan, I think another situation that's going to happen very easily, too, is when you want to get someone into gaming and they have something they're a fan of. What if you had never watched Star Trek, but you want to get Carla into role playing? She is a Star Trek fan. And I've seen that happen on our forums a few times.
It's really hard as a game master because as a player, you can hang back. You can ask the other players for advice. Once again, if the group is running correctly and functionally, you're listening to them. They're listening to you. You're kind of helping each other out. As the game master, you've got the spotlight and can't always deflect it.
What I would do if somebody came to me with that and said, okay, you got to run X property that you are completely unfamiliar with. You have to run, I don't know, Ponderosa, the role-playing game. Oh, that's right?
Awesome.
Pondo. Yeah, you see? You see, I already got one guy hooked here. So,
does it all take place at a steakhouse? What is, yes, Ponderosa?
It's Warren Green.
See, that's what I was thinking, too, is that we'd all have to stand in line with a tray to pick up our food.
Yes. Either way, I'm in.
Pondo Punk.
That's right. Buffet Punk.
I'm sorry. I mixed it up. It was Bonanza, not Ponderosa.
Oh, so you're out now.
I'm out. I don't like Ponderosa. Yeah. Bonanza, I'm there.
I said both of them existed. My dad watched both.
Yeah.
Yes. Or read books of both. Or whatever. I mean,
you have a choice, like in that Bonanza or Ponderosa, either one, or
Bonanderosa.
Buffet Punk. You are asked to run Bonanderosa. So you don't know anything about
soundtrack by Bananarama.
Bananarosa, wasn't he a Teutonic leader during the Crusades?
Yes. So you've been asked to run this and you don't know anything. And let's say you have two choices. You know it's a Western, so you could run the most generic Western you possibly can until you get enough context clues from your players and you hit a Wikipedia page so you could basically fake it. Or
leaving everyone involved disappointed, including you as the GM.
Just like my wife. Or what you can do is you can run it in a different area of the universe, so to speak.
But in a way, though, isn't that kind of taking away from the players the experience they wanted?
Well, you could say, we'll get there.
Well, <they're laughs> right.
You could stall their asses.
All right, now that I think is useful advice. Because I think the two bits of advice I would give is start a quick study and begin in a small area that involves the area you just studied. So if you're running Dune, you read a little bit about...
Take 6 months off, read six books, and then go.
Read about this one corner of House Harkonnen on Arrakis, and that's where it all takes place. Secondly, and similarly, you tell the group, look, I'm willing to try and do this, but you got to give me time to get up to speed.
Right.
Don't throw proper nouns at me. Just be patient because I don't know this. And third, there may be times that you have to plead a little bit of ignorance and the group needs to be patient while you get up to speed because you have asked somebody to basically go from zero to expert while in the field.
Well, how about fourth option of look at it, say, is this something I'm interested in? Do a quick Wikipedia read, say, is this something where I could get into the genre myself or the story myself? And if the answer is no, go back and say, I'm sorry, I would love to do this for you, but I can't do this justice. And if I try to run this, none of us are going to be happy. We need to do something that I feel I can run.
But then they say, no, Bonanderosa.
Run it.
That's the other option. The thing. If somebody's really stonewalled, make them run it.
Wow.
Because I think that's better. Because I agree with what you're saying is I just think that I think what you're going to run into in the case of trying to run it as a game master is you're going to get a lot of the know-it-alls of the players that are there doing, well, no, actually, it's this way.
Yeah.
You know, and you're wrong on this. And that, which is terribly annoying if it's done wrong. Now, on the flip side of it, I was going to say that one thing that could be helpful is the players that are very knowledgeable about it could help the GM in sort of educating them about things as they go along. We talked about earlier it's just hard.
I've read all these Dune books, right?
Yeah.
And I'm a big Dune fan.
Yeah.
I would never run a Dune game for my current group because there are two huge Dune fanatics in the group. Yeah. On the flip side of that, I pity the fool that tries to run a Doctor Who game for me.
Yeah.
I think I would be the only one that would even attempt it.
Good luck, sir.
You know, I've mentioned...
But, you know, what I would say on the player side of all of that, though, too, is at least in the beginning and the outset of this game is you have to lower your expectations. I mean, if you're going into this and you finally force this guy who's not familiar with this stuff
poor bastard
to run it, then you got to lower your expectations so that you're not disappointed right away when he's not doing it correctly in your mind. You know, and then, he may eventually build up to that point.
But I think this is the best advice we've ever given. lower your expectations, people. Yeah. That's it.
What's our takeaways here?
Work, gaming,
lower your expectations. If you're in a group with Dan, make him leader and be his bitch.
This ain't the Air Force, people. Aim low.
Play towards mediocrity.
Yes.
Not even mediocrity. Oh. Least common denominator. Lowest.
Well, let me lowest give. Common I denominator. I think the one piece of advice I have besides being willing to tell your players, no, I can't do this justice, so you don't waste the time doing it, is ask them. What is it about Dune that you find appealing? It's going to take a while.
I was going to say, that's going to be like getting sprayed by an elephant with explosive diarrhea.
You're going to get that.
You're not going to be able to deal with this.
I think that's going to be our Fear the Boot 10-hour bonus episode. Yeah. Pat and I just wanking to Dune.
But let's say something like steampunk. What about steampunk do you enjoy?
Which genre? Oh, that's
a question. Which genre of steampunk?
I actually like
genre punk.
I don't like steampunk. I prefer chappism. And I think
I like tweed, chaps too.
Tweed punk is better than steampunk.
I prefer assless chappism. Where you wear a gimp mask with a gear on it to make it steampunk.
If I can chip in like just two things here. So I've encountered this where I tried to introduce like an 8-year-old, like he wanted to learn about playing D&D, right? So we sat down and we went and I got the Pathfinder beginner box. And where I got the genre bleed was he had read all of the Harry Potter books. So he assumed like the whole world worked the way that Harry Potter worked, you know? So, you know, he has a wand that he can cast a spell. All he has to do is say, you know,
no
whatever weird
magic.
Latin phrase. Yeah, exactly.
And that would be awesome.
And so then I'm sitting there and I'm like, no, you once you cast your magic missile, that's it. It doesn't happen. And he's like, what? So I struggle with that.
What kind of stupid magic is this?
My advice is if you find yourself in the position where, you know, you have to play something that's very genre specific, more often than not, somebody has either created a game or baked up an adaptation for a game that you know. So, for instance, you know, like somebody really loves, you know, Dresden Files. There's a game for that, right? Well, you can go buy the book and there's a sample adventure inside of it. Just play the sample adventure, right? It's already created for you. If you're just going to run it as a one shot, like play the game that's dedicated to it. Or if you're going to play something like, I don't know what, like the H.R. Puffin Stuff game, I'm sure some crazy person has made a fate H&R Puffin Stuff adaptation.
Just where make you sure get you to take drugs first.
Yeah, right. You get to fight Witchy Poo and you get a magic whistle or whatever. But the point being, I think there's a lot of source material out there and adventures are so short and it doesn't take a lot of red meat to feed the fans. So if somebody's a really huge, you know, Game of Thrones guy, well, go get the Green Ronin book and play, you know, their take on Game of Thrones. Not only do you learn a new system as a GM, but all of those little tidbits that you may potentially stumble upon have already been accounted for by the people who, you know, bought the license.
Game of Thrones is easy. Just introduce a lot of really lovable NPCs and kill them all by the end of the adventure.
Everyone at the table must be topless, and by the end of the game, everyone will be dead.
Yes. Done.
I just am impressed that we got an H.R. Puffin Stuff reference.
It's funny he mentioned that, too, because I was at a store earlier today, and I saw an H.R. Puffin Stuff toy. I was like, I know nothing about Puffin Stuff. I saw that today, and then hear it now.
Small world, man.
Maybe it's your destiny.
I don't think so. I took one look at that thing and said, what is this?
For the next podcast, will you run a game of H.R. Puffin Stuff for all of us? We'll all play.
Oh, I would totally do that. I might have to go back and I might have to just refresh my memory on all of the badness of that
thing. This is my first time back on the mic in 3 episodes, so I'm going to control my damn show. Yeah. Thank you guys for tuning in. I appreciate you guys continuing to support the podcast. I hope you have great weeks, great games, and pay no attention to anything Chris said during this episode.
Say what?
Exactly. So
Lowered expectations, just like lowered I told all my dates.
Expectations and bitch punk.
Wow. Yeah.
Thank you guys for coming to
bitch punk.
And remember it. We will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.